Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
I think it's I can't hear an echo. It is April 19th, 2021. This is Atlanta United FC Weekly, a Home Before Dark podcast. Oh, the trifecta. The treble. Yeah, I'm not in on that, I guess. Refix my camera. Get a little situated. Thank you guys for joining us on this lovely Monday evening back at our regular recording time now that the MLS schedule is back in full swing. I am Tim Herb. As always, I'm joined by my lovely co-host, Mr. Kevin Bradley in the middle with his Mictors. I don't know what that is.
Nope, I'm switching it up. Since I've got the new Bud Light flavors, the Mango Mai Tai, I actually have a Panama rum, which is a 8-year single barrel that's aged in bourbon bottles. So figured I'd do a little pairing tonight with my seltzer choice.
We know no matter the seltzer and bourbon choice, it will be sliding across the table all night into his microphone. We have Dan James on the right.
Hello. I'm drinking a Wild Leap. What is it? Rolling Deeper Cinnamon Roll Stout. It's pretty damn good.
Is that an Adele stout rolling in
Adele.
The deep?
It's from LaGrange, Georgia. So yeah.
Okay. And we got ourselves a traditional medicinals throat coat tea over here. Because that weather is hitting pretty good, or the allergies.
Riveting.
Yeah, I was on the Peloton bike this morning and I thought I was actually suffocating, but it was just allergies.
Yeah, my old ass is on 2 different types of allergy medicine. Still not helping.
I'm just doing lines on the hood of my car every afternoon now. I'm just trying to build up my immunity to it.
Better than that's a good idea. Powder. Yeah. Normally it's Goody's powder, like Richard Petty would have wanted. I remember seeing that in the commercials for that. I was like, do you snort that? Because like I had no concept of like a powder to mix into a drink or like whatever to take. Like
you actually
that.
Have to
like,
take it with a friend because they have to blow it into your face. That's the way.
Yeah, they blow it into your eyes. It's the quickest way to your bloodstream. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because all my references to like white powder are from watching like RoboCop and watching crime shows and movies growing up, and I see that I'm like Richard, is he telling people to snort Goody's powder, mm-hmm. and then go to find out.
You just better feed that thing, Dan. Come on, man.
I know, man. Well, this is saying it's getting high, so I gotta. Mm. Gotta pump myself full of insulin.
I can't imagine it wouldn't be that cinnamon roll stout that you're drinking. Nah. That beer milkshake you've got.
There's 12% alcohol in it, so it's pretty good balance.
If you guys are watching us on YouTube, thank you for joining live in the trap. If you're not live, make sure that you're subscribed. If you are live, make sure you subscribe too. Hit the notification bell icon. Make sure you guys know whenever we go live. We're back to our, again, as I prefaced, our regular scheduled time. Monday evenings, 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, following the first weekend of MLS action. There's a lot to discuss. There's a lot to be uninformed about, as we like to do. But we have a lot of normal names in the trap. We got Elliot Beavens been here since like 6:30 p.m. We got Richard Gordon. We got Brian, Michelle, Brittany S., Kevin Escobar. Thank you guys for joining us. And Michelle is pointing out Dan's haircut.
Yep, got it all just cut off. Shout out to Elliot Beavens if he's been here since 6:30. He's a lot more dedicated to the podcast than we are. Yeah. That's good.
I'm just kidding. Because of our lack of dedication, 5 minutes early to the trap is might as well be 2 hours, in my opinion. So if you're early, you're super early. If you're on time, then you're still early.
That's still early.
Yeah, exactly. Unless you're Kevin. And then I
still show up 30 minutes early.
Just have the anxiety of not being on time. I still get that sometimes too.
Never want to be late. Showing up on time, still feel late.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. Oh, so how are you guys feeling today? Kevin, like how are you feeling coming 2 days off of MLS opener against Orlando?
Okay. You know, I'll be completely honest. I'm just here for the trap and shits and giggles. I didn't watch the game. I just watched extended highlights because of the whole broadcast scenario ongoing. Also may have been on the golf course Saturday. I can neither confirm nor deny, but I did watch extended highlights and post game press conferences. And rather than cutting the cord, I have aged in reverse and I'm now plugging the cord in and joined Comcast cable as of today so that I can get all the games now. All the games.
Got that belly button extension.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Reattached the cord, as it were. Yeah. I mean, I don't blame you. I think I would be remiss if I didn't mention the frustrations that were around the broadcast situation. And I just want, like, I'm not trying to make this, I know that always sounds like I'm trying to make it, I'm not trying to make this political, but am I right in my assumption that it's all of the Silicon Valley based tech firm streaming services that have not yet come to an agreement with Sinclair? Is it all based off of political leanings? Like, on either side, like, are both of them operating in bad faith when it comes to these negotiations based on politics? Because
All this stuff just comes down to money. I've seen is the best breakdown I can see is that even for cable services, which they don't tell you whenever you're setting up Comcast, and I had to do some negotiating with them whenever I got it set up, there's an extra fee involved for cable subscribers for regional sports channels. Like, there's a sports fee built into those services that are not built into YouTube TV and the other streaming services. And so basically the lion's share of YouTube TV and Hulu Live subscribers are not taking advantage of those services provided with the regional sports networks. And so the lion's share of that cost is being paid by people that aren't even using it. And so that's the reasoning for those streaming services not accounting for that, is because they're charging such an astronomical rate to get access to that content that cable providers are inherently already paying on top of what their regular cable service is. And so, you know, it just needs to be an option, man. Like, that was what all these streaming services started to be was an option to get what you wanted. And it seems like they've gotten less and less of being able to give you an option. And now it's like an all or nothing to get what you want. And so here I am paying for cable. And between my internet and cable, I'm paying the exact same amount as what I was paying for internet and YouTube TV. And now I have the stuff that I actually want to watch. It's bizarre, man. And I'm sure that the pendulum will swing back the other way and all that, but it's right now I can't go without watching what I really want to watch, you know?
Yeah, isn't it also, they hold the rights for a number of years, but then after those contracts have expired, then they're going to have to renegotiate or try and get contracts again with the sports league. So, I mean, you kind of, if you're Hulu and YouTube TV in this landscape and Bally Sports are treating everybody the same way, you're like, well, should we just wait them out? And then when they don't have the contracts anymore, we can just either try and bid for them ourselves or just have reach negotiations with whoever ends up buying those.
And then apparently Bally Sports is coming out with their own streaming app here soon. It was supposed to come out before MLB started, but it's still not out yet. And it's like, I'm not going to be beholden to another subscription service. Like, you know what I mean? It's just, I'll take my licks and just take Xfinity, and it's going to be less than the cost of YouTube TV plus ESPN plus a VPN plus, you know, Bally Sports. It's like, fuck it, man. I'll go back to it. Whatever. You made your point. You got me. Like, what do you want me to do? You know?
Yeah. I'm sure that Bally Sports app is going to be completely free of bugs and will work all the time.
Right. Right.
Well, yeah, if anything, I mean, ESPN, I still can't get to cast the first time. I don't know if anybody else has this issue. Every time I use ESPN Plus, I cast to a Chromecast or cast to whatever, Apple TV. I have to wait for it to fail, close the app, go back in, and it'll work the second time. Happens every single time, no matter what we're watching, soccer, UFC, whatever it is. But yeah, I mean, I'm kind of stuck too, because shout out to Mike Conti. Because he sent out an amazing, I hope he does this. It might get cumbersome for him to do every single week, but he sent out a pretty comprehensive list of every major TV provider and what channel you could watch it on, including the number for the channel and not just the name of the channel. It was pretty great. That said, because I still haven't gotten over to our Xfinity store, we still had to stream through Twitter. And the problem with that is I cast to it's probably like 5 years old. It's a 65-inch TV. It's still pretty big. And it's still like it was letterboxed in the middle and there's nothing I could do about it.
Yep.
Like it just no matter what I do, it's just I don't know. It's a pain in the ass. Again, that's why I was asking. I wasn't trying to cause some stir or anything. I'm just wondering why it's just the tech firms that can't seem to come to an agreement with Sinclair for these Bally Sports.
Well, it's also
channels. Frustrating
because that was the justification we all got for the YouTube TV price hike, right? It was like, well, it's got to be for these other channels and regional sports channels and all that being included. And then all of a sudden, it's like they didn't lower their price. It's like once they raise it, they're not going to lower it because something gets taken off the shelf. Whenever all the NBC products or whatever, because they're all going over to Peacock, isn't on there anymore, they're not going to lower that. You know, it's all of that shit just gets so muddy at a certain point. And once they've got it, they're not going to give it back.
Yeah, no, that's for sure. I mean, but hey, we get VH1 again for the first time since I was in college. We get to watch really, really terrible reality TV shows. And Dean's right. He say ESPN Plus on Chromecast or Google TV is amazing. It works great on my Apple TV, but like if I'm trying to cast from Twitter, I have to do it from my computer.
But that's, again, it's if it's on ESPN Plus, like that's the other thing is it's like, I just want one thing that's going to get all my shit. And at this point, it's just cable because everywhere is coming out with their own streaming service and they're pulling it off of other platforms that were supposed to be a price alternative with all the convenience and all the things that I really wanted that doesn't exist anymore. It's just, Yeah, it's ridiculous. Yes.
It sucks. It was. I think it was Ringo who said it's in the age of streaming, blackout restrictions should not exist, especially in COVID times. Like it's fucking ridiculous. What were you gonna say, Dan? Sorry.
Oh, I was just gonna say it's. You know, we're in this weird transition period where, I mean, eventually everything's gonna be streaming. Eventually, you know, in 5-6 years or so, and it's just we're in this weird phase where, you know, the cable companies, they don't believe cable's completely dead yet. They're trying to get every last bit out of it, and everyone's trying to negotiate and get the best price. And but eventually when it all evens out and we're on 7G, I think it'll all it's just a really awkward, we're in the teenage years. It's really
It sucks because all the, like, even the online, you know, we used to go to like Reddit soccer streams and all that, and all of them have gotten pretty much shut down and wiped out. You know, even all of the pirated stuff is going away, and it's,
can you believe it?
It's ridiculous, man. I mean, like Brent Crawford says, it ultimately is what I'm trying to get to is that at this point, it's just easier to have cable. Like, it's just, I'll bite the bullet, even if it's me paying $10 more to have that instead of 6 different things that I've got to manage. I'll just pay the extra $10 a month just to have that. But right now, it's apples to apples, and I can at least get what I really want to have whenever it's time to watch it. So,
yeah, and I'll give credit to our buddy Percy Herrera, because he's been trying to get everybody to switch back to cable for like over a year now since this became an issue, and it's very disappointing, and it kind of detracts from the season opener. But I mean, I think it has to be said. I don't know that there's anything that any of us can do to put pressure on any of these companies, but it really sucks that we have archaic restrictions to how we can watch our team. It's and I'll leave it at this. It was very ironic. I got an email the morning or late morning before the game from Hulu and Disney Plus or whatever it was. It was Disney because it was Hulu and ESPN emails. Like, you can watch MLS is back and you can stream the games on ESPN Plus. So what a slap in the face to get that the morning of the game. Yeah.
Yeah.
And God damn it, this is America. This shouldn't be happening. I should be able to watch whatever I want, when I want, whenever the hell I want, and eat ice cream at the same time. I mean, what the fuck?
And dip my French fries in it.
Freedom. Damn right, Kevin.
So that said, I took you guys on a long tangent. Again, I have talking points throughout tonight's show, but I'm interested to hear your thoughts specifically because I didn't get to watch the game. So what were you guys' thoughts? I mean, starting with lineup like we normally do, I did see that Joseph, contrary to what I think we all thought was who we thought was going to start, did not start. We saw Mulroney back in a starting position that had not been there the week prior. A couple of different changes in that lineup. What do you guys think about lineup and the game, at least at a first glance?
Yeah, I was surprised. I thought Joseph might get the start, but I guess he's either going to start or he's going to come on as a sub, it seems like. I thought I was happy to see the defensive lineup with Sosa in there. I worry what we're going to do when Sosa needs a break or, God forbid, needs to sit for a little while. I was surprised to see Mulroney, but I'm kind of... I mean, when he played against Al Huense and he had to come off because of the Guzan red card, he was playing pretty good. And I think he's got a lot of potential until Dam gets to where he needs to be. I feel like Mulroney can fill in. I mean, he had that one straight shot on goal, which was pretty impressive, but it was just saved, obviously. But and also, I was happy to see Moreno. I think Mahinman deserves his place, and Barco. They were kind of ones that we thought we would see anyway. But lineup, I was like, okay, I can go with that. Tim, lineup?
No, yeah, I was good with it as well. I think, you know, as a pragmatist and looking at it objectively, it makes sense to not start Joseph still. as much as we wanted to see it, as much as I know that passion is burning in his gut to get back into scoring form and get on the field and really represent this team, especially at the opportunity down in Orlando, it makes sense. And I'm sure, see, I think the difference too, is that I think Heinze probably is doing a better job of managing Joseph's expectations and managing just the talk around his return to the field, where I don't know that DeBoer's people skills or his communication would have probably translated as such. I think he and Joseph already had a kind of a contentious relationship from what it seemed like. We saw some moments last year. He seems to be in great spirits still, which is fantastic. And in terms of, I think Mulroney's the only thing that really stood out to me in the lineup, but it was also pretty interesting to see. And I think Felipe even wrote a full like article about how telling it was that Machop Chol came in before Jurgen Damm did. And the fact that we haven't seen Jurgen Damm start, there's gotta be something going on in training where he doesn't, you know, he's not really showing out and really endearing himself to Heinze right now, because all things considered, looking at last year's lineup, looking at performances, and looking at our need for a good attacking winger, having lost Bialba, having lost Gressel, you would think that Damm would be the next guy up.
I don't know, man. I mean, I feel like Brooks Lennon is that guy for us right now. He has completely taken that position and made it his own. I mean, every bit of the extended highlights I watched was all service coming into the box on set piece creation with Lennon or in the run of play from right wing from Lennon. Like, I think even in those first two games in CCL, you know, I think he's really established himself as that player on that right-hand side. And, you know, the Mulroney thing is, it's like, I feel like him and Ibarra are going to kind of swap back and forth throughout the season. And I agree, Tim. I think it's just Damm hasn't shown out as much as what Brooks Lennon has and sort of endeared himself to Heinze, you know?
Yeah. And I will say the one thing that really does stand out that I really like about Gabriel Heinze, and maybe it goes back to you guys' fight about Alan Franco last week, but the fact that a guy who got brought in, granted, I would say Jurgen Damm has been, his stock was not super high whenever he signed for us. And it was kind of a reclamation project in some ways whenever he came over and kind of kickstart his career. But to look at a guy like Damm, who a lot of people were expecting to start, and to see that he is not getting an automatic bid to get on the field in lieu of Jake Mulroney, but then also getting a super draft pick, or I guess, was he a super draft or he was a homegrown player? How does that work? Because Chol was a homegrown player, went and played at Wake Forest, and now he's back. Did we draft him, or like, did we have his, I don't know how that ended up working, but the fact that it's in the show description. We don't really get too far into details of that rules of MLS 5 years in. This is our fifth year. Right?
No, it's crazy.
How crazy is that?
Yeah. But Chol was an academy product. And then after the academy, he went to Wake Forest.
Yeah. And then how did he come back, though? Was it a like MLS rights we signed him, or?
I think we had like
the draft.
I believe we had his rights anyway because he was a homegrown coming through our academy. And then I believe it was just I don't think he came through the draft. I'm sure someone in the trap will correct me if he did, but I think he was just a signing that we, you know, kept that relationship with and saw him play in Wake Forest. And
I think that Heinze, it's very positive to me that he doesn't seem to have any preconceived notion or any sort of bias towards these players coming in. I will say
none of these players so far have been his players, though. I would say that Franco is probably the first of this new batch that, I mean, Sosa has certainly proven himself, but it'll be interesting. Back to your point about mine and Dan's argument last week, what happens whenever there's somebody that Heinze clearly went after and wanted to have as a part of this lineup is now poised with the task of earning his minutes, so to speak, or taking that spot from somebody that's been playing and proving themselves in the first 3 to 4 weeks whenever Franco gets into the lineup. You know, I think that's going to be a different dynamic. Dam certainly wasn't that, and he was able to be evaluated from an unbiased standpoint. It'll be interesting to see what happens whenever there's going to be an inherent bias for somebody that Heintz clearly wants and wanted to fit into this system. So
I don't think he specifically, from what I've read, I understand his primary need was a center back, a starting center back. I mean, when Giannetti came in, he really wanted Giannetti. That was his guy.
That was his guy more than Alan Franco was.
Even after the medical, Heinz still wanted Man United to take him. And as for training, I really don't think Heinz gives a shit about who you are, what you're getting paid. All he cares about is how you're performing. That's what he cares about. And if you're not performing, he doesn't care about you. But if you are performing, it's like, okay, well, you can take a spot.
Within reason, though, like that was one of the things from the post-game conference that I really enjoyed, that hearing Lennon, who we just talked about, who has clearly endeared himself to Heinze and has sort of taken on that position, him talking about Heinze's role and interest in the players, not just on the field, but off the field, and wanting to know what's going on with them on a personal level and trying to mold them as individuals rather than just inside the locker room. You know, I think it says a lot about what he's doing to try to endear himself, and not even endear himself, but to sort of meld himself with the locker room and the lineup and the players that are playing for the team, whether they're on the bench or not, so that they know that he has a vested interest in them as individuals, not just as players, you know?
Yeah, I do. I agree with you, but I think that, you know, if you're not, he's putting that investment into you and you're not performing. And Lennon has, to me, been so far one of the highest performing players outside of Sosa this season. Heinz has been there. He's done that. And if you're not going to perform for him, then he may help, you know, talk to you like, okay, this is what we need to be improved. Maybe this is why I didn't pick you. But I still think it's going to be, you know, you've got to put your, effort in for him to put his effort into you.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the way it needs to be. Right. I think I love that already. Like I was all for getting to more patience and all the opportunity in the world to, in, you know, rare weird circumstance last year to kind of right the ship. And when he was gone, it's whatever, it's up to the front office. But being that they got their guys, like he is, I think we keep using the word endearing, but I think he's definitely endearing himself to me in the way that he's managing this team, the way that he's switching up the lineup where it needs to be switched up. He is not letting guys slack off. He's ticking all the boxes. We're playing attractive soccer. We're not scoring yet. I still think that a lot of the way that we're circulating the ball, the chances that we're getting, the final product's not there, but you could see what's building. We talked about that, I think, last week. It's kind of, there's a genesis of like a complete and total soccer team out there that I think is, the dam's going to break. probably not with him in the lineup, though. The dam's going to break with regards to scoring. And I think that we're off to the right foot. I think we're off to as good of a start as we could have hoped for coming into the season off of last year. Brand new manager, some turnover in the squad, new formation, everything. And coming up, I think Elliot Beaven, that was one of the first things that he said in the trap, was Alexi Lawson, Stu Holden hating on Atlanta United. but did not mention they played a good Orlando team, not giving them not giving them beef about their performance. Yeah, I think that's correct. I think that Orlando needs. I hate giving them credit, but they're a good team. Yeah. And the fact that we went down in our first game, probably in front of that many fans, and how long?
Yeah.
And we still.
We had to look at all those players had to actively engage and look at Nani's hair for 90 minutes. I mean, that alone.
And not get a boner? Is that what you're saying? That was my stroke. No, that's
disgusting.
I think
disgusting.
All right.
Joseph, Barco, and Anton Walks all looked at him and said, dude, that is not
so
what we were trying to do.
Gross.
That was, oh, God. Thing is, he looked at himself in the mirror that morning.
This is what I want. I paid for this. Yeah. Shout out to Alex Morrison, longtime listener, first time live commenter. Good evening, boys. Good to have you, man.
Yeah, interact. I believe we interact with Alex a decent amount on Twitter, so it's good to see him in here. Same with Jeff Rollins. Saw Jeff Rollins subscribed earlier. He's in the trap. And Stephen Perales, I think. He says, off topic, have you guys tried the Topo Chico seltzers?
It's on my list. I can't wait.
He's talking about the hard seltzers, right? Because
of course he is. Why would he be talking about anything else on this show? He's not talking to you. Why would I'm just joking.
I drink spicy water every single podcast. I got that blackberry citrus from Kroger. Still one of the best flavors out there. Like LaCroix keeps putting great stuff out. LaCroix's got
Topo Chico is top shelf, just regular seltzer. I can't wait to get their.
Tim, it's taken me a little while, but I'm firmly on board the limoncello train.
Okay,
gross.
Perfect.
Oh my gosh!
So it is not a typical seltzer. It is a dessert seltzer. Like it is a reward for yourself.
It's like a fine dessert wine.
It has this. It's not umami, right? Because it's not like a soy flavor, but it's I can't describe the flavor it has.
It's kind of got that
quality.
It's got that richness that a classic Coca-Cola has.
So it's like
that was what
it's the what is it the muscadine wine of seltzers basically.
No, I'd say a heavy port.
That's what Brian just said. I drink it out of a port glass. It has like a creamy, consistency. Not consistency, but like a quality to it. I can't.
It's got a good
it's got a rounded essence that none of the other LaCroix's have.
I'm good.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm good.
That's very true.
So Nani is really in taking on this Florida man stereotype pretty good with that haircut, right? I mean,
and
he's endearing himself.
I think he's trying to become the Orlando mascot. I think he's secretly just transitioning into becoming the Orlando mascot. He's just growing out his mane.
I mean, respect. If he can take it all the way down here,
You know what's bad is I can totally see him just because of Euro fashion. I can see him with that walking around with a purple, maybe quarter sleeve shirt and then maybe some cut off Daisy Duke jean shorts and totally both being European fashion and then also being Florida man fashion as well.
And then being anti-vax and anti-mask.
Yeah. The Venn diagram of Euro and Florida fashion is Nani. Soon he's going to have the dog, the bounty hunter look. And it's going
to
be.
He's truly endeared himself to their fan base.
I mean, I'm waiting for the dog, the bounty hunter look. That'll be amazing if he does that.
It will be.
Oh, that'll be amazing.
Oh, Michelle says, don't insult the, and then she spells it wrong and makes it so much better that you're a penis instead of you're a penis. And then on to the next subject.
All right.
Speaking of Nani, was Nani and Barco, right? Yeah. And Joseph's just behind them, just looking grinning. Up.
So what happened?
So Nanny had he had the ball on the end line, on the sideline, and Barco comes in like 2 feet, makes an amazing sliding tackle, gets the ball and everything, but Nanny has to jump like 6 feet into the air to avoid the tackle. Doesn't get hit, but then he tells Barco that he's displeased with the way that Barco came in. And unfortunately, Barco's like, he's not looking Nanny in the eye, and Nanny's kind of being like over, you know, he's got his whole shoulders hunched down and he's looking down at Barco, giving him the daggers. And Barco's just like, yeah, made the tackle, man.
Yeah.
What you gonna do about it? So
Justin's behind him just grinning. It's
really
it was great. Such a great moment.
That's great.
He's Nanny. Anyway, so I feel like at defense, we're solid. I'm so happy with our defense, especially where we are in the third game of that we've played, third competitive game that we've played. Obviously, we're still a little shaky at the back here and there, but you know, we've kind of been told that that's what to expect with the Heinze system. But then I feel like these guys have done fantastic. I feel like we really have got a solid back line. Thanks to Miles, thanks to Walks, thanks to Sosa. Sosa's been immense. I feel like I think I called him the Carlos Loren Naglorenwitz Perez or something. He's like a mold of Carmona, Jeff, Nagby, and LGP all rolled into one handsome package. And then, of course, I think I said this last week, as we kind of go forward, our attacking midfield it's not too bad, and our wings are pretty good. But the thing is, we've got no one in the box. Like, if we're trying to make a cross, if we're trying to do like a damn cutback pass, there just doesn't seem to be anyone there to really challenge the center backs. So as soon as you stick 3-4 guys in the box, you're easily going to keep Atlanta United off the ball. I'm wondering if there's a way that we can have, if there's a way we can have two forwards on the pitch, because I don't think we've got a number 9 who can do it by himself, because Joseph is Joseph. But now I think it's pretty obvious over 3 games that he just doesn't have the same threat that he's had when he's been healthy. So he's not going to create those gravity wells yet that to pull those defenders out to make room for anyone else. So it's either we just wait on Joseph, or we find another way to get another forward up top that can give Lopez or someone some more striking power. Maybe it's someone on the wing, like we can pull Damo Moreni and put Conway up there, and maybe shift. Maybe you go to a 4-2-3-1, not 4-2-3, like a 4-1-3-2 or something like that, where you can get more guys upfield, or you're relying on your wingbacks to just pressure more, like we did it with under Martino, where they would just go and then we would just deal with it at the back if it came back. So that's
my concern right now. I think some of that'll depend on when Franco gets in the lineup too, right? Like, especially if he's what we're assuming he would be, as far as having players at the back to just deal with it, depending on what that back line is comprised of. If you've got players back there that you know are going to be able to, you know, that's one of my questions, I guess, about this week is, saw Bello step up, ends up having a huge save on the post to keep one of the best opportunities on goal for Orlando out, whatever, forget who it is coming into the box. Yeah, Miles slides, Walks gets out of position, they take a shot, it gets deflected, kicks back out on the top of the 18, Bella just happens to go near side post to just clear it out as it comes in online because Guzan wasn't in position for it, you know. What were you guys' thoughts on Bello this week? I know he's been kind of up and down over the past few weeks, and talking about defense and then kind of work our way up the field, what were your thoughts on him this week?
I honestly don't know that I have a bad thing to say about any of our defensive players this weekend. I thought Bello was fine. He wasn't the weak link that I don't think that he was whenever in either of the CCL games. I thought that he was fine. I mean, to me, I think Brooks Lennon has been the standout on the defensive end in terms of his ability to attack. It's just crazy. I mean, you already spoke to it, but if you want to talk, like, he's been the focal point of the offense right now, and that's both a bad thing and then also great because it's showing how good he can be. But I mean, I'm good with Barca or Bello. I mean, from this past weekend, I think just keep on keeping on. I think he's getting better as the games go on. And
do you think he's doing, you know, obviously Lennon is the standout, right? And correct me if I'm wrong, you're kind of expecting, but not really expecting, Bello to do a similar role over on the left side, where you want him to get at least a little bit more engaged on the front end of the ball. You know, we've seen it here and there, but it just seems like whenever you compare those two, if they're really going to do kind of similar roles moving up and down the field, I think Bello, you're wanting to have a little bit more of a defensive role than you want Lennon to. But comparing those two, you know, you can't help but see a little bit of a discrepancy there in what their output is on the field. And I think that Bello will get there. But, you know, what was his play like this week as far as what he was doing on the offensive side of the ball?
I think he was good. We just don't Bello was good. And he went toe-to-toe, from what I can see, with Ruan. And Ruan's one of the fastest guys in the league. And he's a fantastic defender. So, I mean, Bello caused him some problems. Ruan caused Bello some problems. But the thing is, because Bello was such, caused so many problems, it caused Ruan to have to stay and be pinned back and deal with Bello. So he wasn't able to get into the attack, which was fantastic. So it was kind of like Bello almost defending higher up the field. I think that, so I've been really impressed with Bello. I know I've given him shit for, you know, getting some balls behind it, but he's going to learn that. And the thing is, the kid is so quick. He will eventually get that defensive stuff, but I think, like, let's push him to be more of an attacking player. That's okay for me. And to your point, Kevin, I think when Franco comes in the lineup, if you line up with a back three, if you start off with that, you know, we've been playing 4-3-3 the past few games. So if you start off with the Walks, Miles, and Franco back line with Sosa in front of them, then you've provided, like, almost, it's like a defensive diamond, or, you know, a triangle with Miles in the middle to kind of clean up whatever. Then that will allow you to push Bellen, Heinemann, Lennon up front. And Bello and Lennon can kind of take those wing spaces, but then we're kind of pushing more guys into the middle. So you could push, like, Barco, Lopez, and Conway up there. And that should hopefully get more guys into the box to deal with crosses. The only thing is, then you just got to be really careful on your wings. And I think we would be okay when the ball gets further back into, like, our defensive third, but then you're creating a lot of space on the wings in the middle half of the pitch. So I think that could be something we potentially see. And that those are three solid defenders, whichever way you look at it, plus Sosa. I mean, it'll be interesting to see something like, and I would assume we would start to see it in the next few games.
So, Tim, what do you think, to Dan's point, moving up to the front end of the field and offensive side of the ball, you know, what are you thinking over the next couple of weeks? Seems like Atlanta's kind of missing that last step into goal generation mode, so to speak. You know, I think even though it ended up being 0-0, the shots and shots on goal were the same between Atlanta and Orlando this past week. So it's not like they aren't taking shots or making opportunities. I think it's just a little bit less than fans would expect, and obviously that the team would expect, considering that in three games they put up two goals. What do you think is missing on that front end of the ball, and what do you think may change over the next couple of weeks?
I love what Barco's doing. I think that one thing, he has reverted back to that vertical, or the lateral dribbling, I should say, where he is not we saw last year and even some, I think, in preseason maybe, where he seemed like he was more willing to take shots from more adventurous positions and try to, you know, create chaos in the box with those shots. And I'm seeing that like gun shyness from him. Hopefully that's not something that's going to stick around, because I think he and Brooks Lennon are like our catalysts right now in terms of offense. I don't know what to expect from Moreno right now. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt that his shakiness and his rustiness is just that. I think that he just needs to get his sea legs under him. And I think that'll end up, you know, he'll end up being a little more important in the attack. I don't know. I like the idea, though, that you had, Dan, in terms of playing two forwards up there. It's something we have. I don't remember the last time we really saw it, to be honest. But if you take, let's say we take Mulroney out, kind of reform and retool and put Jackson Conway and Lisandro Lopez up front, and you can maybe kind of task Licha to be that true holding number nine and hopefully get Conway some good chances and kind of open him up to be more of a free roaming forward. I liked what I saw out of Conway last year. I don't know. Obviously USL is a different competition and or different level of competition than MLS. And I don't know. I'd be interested to see him in there, but I don't know. It just seems like we break down. We do so well, again, building out of the back and just being short up in the back line and being able to build out of the back and not in a super direct fashion, I think is very positive. I think if there's one piece, if what we're missing is that final piece up front, I'm totally fine with that, because
not exciting soccer, Tim.
I don't give a fuck.
That's not what you said last year. FDB out, Heinze out for sure. Can't just be flip-flopping around.
Yeah. Jeff Rollins makes a good point, and Brittany S. agreeing with him as well. John Gallagher looked real good in limited minutes with Austin. Love to get that $250,000 back. I would agree. I do miss that guy. I think he would have been a perfect spark plug to put in right now, especially in the absence of the once in future king, Joseph Martinez, up front. I think, yeah, I don't know. And Elliot Beeman begs the question, where's Eric Lopez? I don't think he's on the bench yet again. Tyler Wolf has been making the 18 as opposed to Eric Lopez. I don't believe it is an international slot issue at this point, right? I know we saw Mateus Hosetu is being loaned out to ATL2 or ATL-UTD2 until he gets his green card situated. And once he does that, we get him back into the senior squad. I think we need to take more chances, to be honest. And I think that, I don't know, it's hard for me. I'm not a tactician. I'm never going to claim to be. I don't know what's leading to that breakdown up front. Dan can probably speak further to that. But, I mean, he brought up the point of not having anybody in the box. And there are multiple times where the commentators on Unimas were saying Lisandro Lopez should be on the back post. Like, there's nobody on the back post right now. There's a cross coming in, and there's nobody there for it. Like, I don't know if we're just still kind of getting that part figured out. I have no idea, but it'll change. Yeah. I'm sure it'll change.
And I think some of the team is still building chemistry. You know, Dan, to your point about Dam not being in the lineup earlier, that was some of the stuff that I saw in that. I think it was the second leg whenever he did come in, whenever he and Lopez were playing up top, and just the consistent lack of chemistry between the two of them, where Lopez is expecting him to make a run. And I mean, granted, it was a terrible pass to him, but expecting him to be in a certain position when he wasn't, and vice versa. Damn, expecting Lopez to be in a certain position whenever he wasn't. I think it's kind of this microcosm of what's happening on that front side of the ball, where there's clearly a lot of talent and a lot of individual talent, but it's a matter of getting those individual talents to mesh and sync up together, where they're all at and where they're all anticipated to be at in the run of play.
Yeah, and I think we'll get there pretty soon, because under FDB, I mean, he was trying to preach that same thing. Like, but the thing is, he would never give directions. And Heinz is the complete opposite. He will.
Oh my God. Can we just admire the fact that he's actually on the feet, like standing on the sideline coach, actively managing. I mean, that alone, Jesus.
And he smiles no matter how, like, how cheeky that smile is. Like, he's like, yeah, no, exactly. It's a very like wry smile that he gives, like when he's unimpressed with what's going on, I think.
I feel like the more and more as things go on, I mean, I thought FDB, when he came, I was excited about it. I thought a lot of his, you know, there's some similarities with what we were doing, but I still feel at this point in time, the attack is more, I still feel it's better than it was last year. And I felt like I get,
well, the, in hindsight, Martinez isn't in the lineup.
Well, in hindsight, I think I gave DeBoer a lot more patience than he probably deserved.
An F plus is still an F. You know what I mean? Like, it's still failing. So that's the attack is still failing. Whereas the defense and the build-up play.
I mean, you could thank Frank. I mean, without him, I don't know if we'd have three shutouts in a row, honestly. I think that this is just a layover from his tenure, honestly.
Yeah. Definitely with Miles. Well, I mean, you know, Miles came out with FDB. We've never had a defender like Miles. Going back to international slots, sorry, Tim, we have 10 guys count towards our international slots. I think we only have 9 slots, and those include Meza and Rosetto being loaned out. So maybe Eric Lopez is an available international spot guy.
I believe he is available right now. Yeah. I mean, he played for us in preseason. The different sanctioning bodies, I'm sure, but I mean, I don't know that we would have given him play time in preseason. Mm-hmm. If we knew that he was going to be ineligible going into the season, we could have given time with it, with the twos or something like that.
I think it's just a sort of sorting out the paperwork. I definitely think I don't think he's not performing or something, but I think there's every intent to get Eric Lopez involved or to be available this season.
Yeah, I don't know. Jeff Rollins makes a point about FDB because who said that? Somebody said Brian said Frank didn't deserve it. I don't know if he's talking about the patience or the axing. I don't know. But Jeff Rollins was saying 2 trophies. Honestly, though, FDB can coach defense. That's true.
He to go.
Yeah, a scapegoat.
Exactly.
I had it pinned on the screen, but it was pretty positive to see Stephen Perales was saying that Miles was in the MLS team of the week. And it was fantastic. And to his point, the Moreno Martinez needs more chemistry. Hopefully he learns Joseph's runs. I hope so too. It's all in due time, I think. Hmm. And
the good thing about, Heinze has a plan. He has a plan.
He's so did FDB.
It to the guy.
He had a 10-year plan. You are saying he had a whole mortgage plan. He had a 30-year plan lined up for us, Dan. You said we got on a low interest rate. We all refinanced for him. We were hooked, line, and sinker on it.
Turns out it was a junk jumbo rate.
He didn't know how to communicate his plan to the players. So you're going to have all the plans in the world, but as you know very well, Kevin, if you can't communicate those plans, it is junk.
You're saying I'm junk?
Yeah. Well,
you said you're a predator. He called you predatory loan.
Well, I heard. That's what I heard.
He called you a predatory loan, Kevin.
That's pretty rude.
Why have you got to be stuffing these things in people's mailboxes, Kevin? I mean,
rates are going back up, Dan. You got to do it now. There's a stimulus check out there. It's happening.
Well, guess what's not losing value, and that's gold. And I'm here to talk to you about buying gold.
What are you talking about?
Our sponsor at Home Before Dark is gold.
Please. Did you see Dogecoin? Did you see Dogecoin the past couple of days?
No. I'm a Tron guy.
Tron? What the fuck is that? Doge, man. Tron? Doge all the way. Went up like tons of percent.
So did Tron.
So what were your biggest takeaways from this week's game, guys?
We continue to progress on the path of success. We're getting better. I was really, Orlando were the favorites going in there. We shut them out, even though they shut us out. I feel like I was predicting that we would lose. So I felt like for the most part, there was some nervy things, nervy moments. Guzan made that in some incredible saves. There was some luck happening there. So it could have been a lot worse, but we didn't. And I feel like it's something to build on.
Okay.
You play to win the game, or you play to draw the game if you're going away in the swamps of Orlando.
True.
Playing in front of that crowd. And hopefully, I think it was deflating to them more than it was anything, but just because fuck them. But
so do you guys think after that game, again, I think it's first game of the season, right? Like we're no longer in preseason form. Obviously the team is still improving and we expect that to continue. But do you think 1 week in, this is an MLS Cup champion in the making in Atlanta United?
Yeah, I've been saying this all along, fam. This is championship or bust, dude.
Yeah, I mean, we've conceded no goals.
Yeah. Like Brittany S. said, 99 more points, right? We're going to hit 100 points this season. We're going to hit 100 points.
I don't think we're going to win the supporter shield, but I think we could win MLS.
We're
going to
run away with it. We're not just going to win it, baby. We're running away with the supporter shield.
So, I mean, all of this is kind of a segue to just talk about the current betting odds for the 2021 MLS Cup.
Run it down, Kev. Run it down.
Hold on. No, I want to ask you guys what. So I ran. I didn't want to ruin it for Kevin, but I did. I found I think their live odds. They do that a lot now. I don't know if you guys have noticed. Like watch UFC, and they're always like the live odds. Like 2 minutes into the second round is.
Well,
like,
you know that DraftKings actually got they're doing a deal with, I don't know if it's DirecTV or something, where you can use your remote to place bets and stuff on the TV in real time with sporting events.
Kevin is pretty crazy. Promoting gambling just like predatory loans.
I'm all about it. Just like predatory loans. I'm all about it. No, so I wanted to get your guys' thoughts. So I have – this is sportsbettingdime.com. Don't go – don't open it, Dan. Don't open it, Kevin. I want to ask you guys, but for those of you who are watching or listening at home, just to give you – so these are based off of DraftKings odds, it looks like, and they're live. So right now – Kevin, I want you to give me who you think the top five favorites are to win MLS Cup. And I'll tell you in real time if they're one of the five teams.
Columbus.
Actually, I won't tell you in real time. I'll wait for Dan. Hold on.
Okay. Oh, thanks.
This is going to be a longer episode, I think, guys.
So but top it's five. I'm going to say Columbus, LAFC, Portland, Philly.
Hold on. Portland, Philly.
Okay. Seattle.
Okay. Dan?
All right. I'm going to go to results from last week. So I'm definitely going to have Columbus. So my top five, right? So Columbus, okay. Definitely. I'm gonna put man.
Do, 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 do.
Portland.
Okay.
LAFC, sure. I'm also gonna put in Philadelphia.
Okay, so you're just saying my five. Okay, why don't you just say whatever Kevin said?
I will say Atlanta United. Is that what you said?
No, I did not say that.
So, in order. So, if you got odds work, it's 400. This isn't like one odds, whatever. 400, so meaning you have to bet $400 to win $100. Number one, highest odds, LAFC. Which is pretty crazy. Not crazy, but considering they've flamed out in the past two, the last two seasons, right? In the playoffs. Wow.
Have we heard of Vela's injury?
I did not realize. I missed that, I guess, that they got hurt.
He got subbed off. I don't know what the injury is.
Gotcha. And we still haven't heard about Pato's injury, right? Hopefully he's fine. He's had such a tangled career. Number two at 550, Columbus Crew, defending champions Columbus Crew and the Crew. They looked pretty good. Yeah, right, against Philly. They played Philly yesterday, right? That's who it. I guess they drew that game. They still looked pretty decent in the bits that I watched. Okay, at 650, and who I think are probably the best looking team that I've seen. Granted, I haven't watched 90 minutes of everybody so far, but Seattle Sounders. At number three. So Kevin has that. Dan didn't guess them. This is the most surprising one to me. So at four, at plus 900, we have Toronto FC, who seems to be like a fucking powerhouse in MLS.
Ooh.
Yeah. Which is very interesting to me. Because
could it just be a recognition? Like, I don't know. They didn't even make the playoffs last year, did they?
Yeah, yeah. They did.
They did.
So Toronto are one of those teams where no matter what, I don't count them out because there's
they've
some
consistently
way,
been in there. Yeah.
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 It's going to be
Toronto against Montreal. They didn't play. Well, no, they didn't. They did play. I mean, they got beat 4-2, but it's like, are they prioritizing? Are they prioritizing Champions League, which I feel like they should? It's only the first game of the year. I don't know. I can just never count Toronto out. I can never count Seattle out.
Yeah. What was the fifth one, Tim?
Fifth one's you guys both got Philly. Dupe
that's
squad.
Four or actually, five. I'll take that.
And I will say in one that neither of you guys guessed are tied at plus 1,100 with Philly at six. I guess they're tied for fifth, as it were. It's New York City FC. And then we and again, these are live odds, which is interesting because –
because they lost this past weekend and so did the Red Bulls, didn't they?
NYCFC lost to DC, and then the Red Bulls lost to
Kansas City 2-1.
Yeah, that's right. But it's interesting, though, because opening odds, which came out on March 15th, were LAFC at plus 400, which they still are. So they're still holding steady at a pretty heavy pretty heavy odds early season, especially in a league that has so much parity. But Columbus and Seattle were both plus 500. I guess these odds.
Wait, this can't be right. You said you'd had to bet 400 to win 100.
Yes.
So why would the favorite win? Is that?
It's just because it's because normally with like fight odds or like two teams playing against each other, heads up. It's you have the favorite's going to be actually no you're right you're right you're right
no that doesn't make sense because then it would
bet,
be
bet
like
bet $100 win $400
right yeah. right
Sorry.
That makes
I'm,
sense
I'm,
okay.
I'm used to the heads up where it's negative yes you're right
yeah,
yeah. correcting me
yeah because I was like if the other one's plus 500 for second place that doesn't
yeah,
make
sorry.
Sense okay
I'm still learning this stuff I'm used to the UFC and like college game day odds where it's
right
like,
it's yeah. negatives. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. You usually have a guy that's negative or a team that's negative.
I got you.
Atlanta United checks in at, what is this, like 2, 4, 6, 8, and 10th, tied for 10th with Portland and FC Dallas at plus 2,500. So.
You said that's Atlanta?
Yep.
So you bet 100, you win 2,500?
Yeah, so I believe these were last updated. I think they probably should update. In the next day or two, I would guess. But again, these are live odds, and we'll put a link in the description, in the show notes to these if you guys want to take a look at them. to the site that we're looking at for these odds. But anyway, yeah, like the worst Houston and San Jose, who played each other on opening night, are tied with DC, who, so two out of these three teams won on the weekend at 15,000 plus 15,000 odds. And wow. Then the next closest to them is plus 8,000 with Vancouver. So like those three teams are heavily, heavily slated as underdogs. Anyway, I thought that was interesting. I was looking at that today. LAFC still plus 400. So actually, so I'll be interested to see what those look like next week or later on in the week, whenever they get shifted. But
yeah.
Joe Johnstone's right. You pay 100 and get 400. I know. I had one job. I had one job.
That's one job, Jim. One job.
Yeah. Speaking of MLS openers this week, did any of you guys, I guess anybody in the trap or the two gentlemen with me, did you guys happen to see any of Chicago and New England on Saturday?
They drew 2-2, right?
Mm-hmm. They did.
Before we get to that, our score predictions, are we doing points for result and points for
sure? Yeah.
Score. One for result, three for score, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. So before we get to Chicago talk.
Oh, you're only doing this because you got 1 point. You're only doing this because you're the only one to score a point off of the predictions on Saturday.
Got him. I checked first. So yeah, I got a point. We can go to we can talk about Chicago now.
Yeah. You're right, because I predicted 2-0 Atlanta. Dan predicted 2-1.
2-1, yeah.
Yeah, and loss. You predicted 1-1, right?
Yep. So, all right, Chicago. Right. Dan, did you watch it?
I watched a little bit of the highlights. Not much, really. We've always had problems with Chicago in Chicago, but whenever they've come here, we've managed to handle our business. So, since they come in here, it's a home opener. I think that. I mean, Chicago are the favorites going into this. Do you have the betting odds, Tim? What's the
What's
the line?
Let me see. While you talk, I can pull that up.
Well, Chicago the favorites. So I use SofaScore. So they're saying that Chicago are about a 7 and Atlanta United a 6.85. So you know they're
Chicago's a 7-point favorite.
No. All right. So they're thinking it's going to be like a 2-1 win Chicago. I don't think that Chicago's going to score two goals on us. I feel like we've got a pretty good defense that's going to negate those. I could see like us grabbing like a 1-0, maybe even a 2-0 victory. But more than again, we've got our own scoring issues. But, I mean, I don't know.
So what do you think? What do you think? Score prediction. Let's hear it. What are you thinking?
I'm going to go 2-0.
2-0. All right.
ATL.
I think it was – who was it? Brent Crawford said Chicago had some beautiful play that scares the hell out of me for this week. I agree. Like, the I don't know a lot of their players' names. I know that Robert Berich is very dangerous up front, and he was getting on the end of a lot of chances on Saturday. They look like a good team. Like they're sneakily a good team. And that said, our defense is outstanding. So I'm not worried about them scoring goals again as much as us scoring goals. So I hate to do this, but I know it's a home opener. I'm going to probably go with a 0-0. I think we hold a clean sheet again, but I don't. I still don't know where the goals are coming from.
Who do you think ties?
Huh?
You said 0-0. Who do you think ties? I'm going
to
say
1-0. Does that mean you want me to tell you who I think will score?
Yeah, and that'll be an extra point if you get any of the people that score right. We'll do an extra one for that. So who do you think for all that? Right. It's almost like you should go not just say 10-0 and then just list.
Why don't we just do 11-0 and then
11-0 list the whole roster if you get the result right and the players.
That's a good
point.
Who
do you think, Dan?
I think Moreno and Emerson Hyman.
Okay. I would say 1-0 Atlanta, and I think Barco.
So are we going to do Philadelphia Union as well?
No, because that game's on
Well, we're going to have a podcast Tuesday. Before then.
Yeah, that'll be on Tuesday, so we'll be fine there. Yeah,
so we are, according to – so this is different types of odds. I don't know how this pans out. The score has – I think we were talking about it earlier. ESPN Plus's app is not very good. I don't like to use it for this stuff. But the score, which is, I think, Canada's version of ESPN – well, it's not affiliated with ESPN, but their big sports network. They have betting odds built into their app, and they have Atlanta United at 2.05. I don't know if with the – is that 2.05 to 1 odds, and then draw is 3.6 to 1 odds, and then Chicago winning is 3.15 to 1, I think. So it looks like – I don't know how that works if we're slight favorites. Yeah, I think we're slight favorites because I'm looking at some of these odds right now, and they are pretty damn lopsided. Like NYCFC are 1.38 versus a 6.1 to Cincinnati. Yeah, okay, I think that's how that – I think that's how that works. But yeah, it looks like we are the slight favorites probably because we're at home.
So let's see what the trap is saying. Brittany S, 2-0 Atlanta United. Elliot Beaven, Atlanta 1-0. Brent Crawford, we're at home with fans. We should be okay. 2-1 Atlanta. Joe Johnstone, good to see you, man. Good to have you back in here. 4-2 Atlanta. Brian, 1 goal over 3 games. That doesn't make any sense to me. I think you were talking about something else. Oh, no, we've got 2 goals over 3 games. I don't know what that is. Steven Perales, 1-0 win. Atlanta off a penalty. Still think the offense needs time. Michelle, 1-0. And Bello gets the goal.
I hope so.
I even says Guzan scores. Yeah. And Haleto, 0-0. And a lot of pitching afterwards. Yep.
I wanted to go old school.
It's boring soccer.
I wanted to go old school Atlanta United FC Weekly. And I put on Twitter earlier, I wanted to ask people to give us one positive and one negative from this past weekend, see what they came up with. And the positive was overwhelmingly Sosa, but I'll get into him. I guess now. Our favorite Orlando City troll, Lee, also known as Everyone is a Bozo.
Is he a troll, though?
No, he's just a
lovable troll.
He's a friend now.
He's just good with the bants. One positive, y'all didn't win. One negative, we didn't win.
Okay. That is pretty good.
Larry Luke of Way Down South, he's saying positive, Sosa and Lennon. Negative, not enough creativity in the final third. Elliot Beaven, who I think has already probably chimed in here with this, but saying positive, Guzan made good saves. And negative, need to do better on the final third. Michelle saying negative, Barco didn't punch Nani in the face. Agreed. Positive, Sosa's fun to watch, and I'm really excited to see him grow into the team. Brian Olivas saying positive, Sosa got me feeling real, real good about our midfield. Negative, Barco's still doing that thing where he holds on to the ball for roughly 364,278 years before doing anything with it. I think this is Nathan Lyons, Aon at Aurum, saying positive, Sosa is a boss in the midfield. Negative, Guzan's distribution is a step back from Rocco. First full game for Guz, I know. Hopefully it improves. Santa United, bringing the gifts as always. Positive, defense looked solid. I liked Hines' substitution. He wanted the W, and we tied on the road against a very good Orlando team. Negative, our finishing and our set pieces need some extra attention. Not firing on all cylinders. Our buddy Gabe Laha saying positive, Santiago Sosa is a beast. Negative, wasn't a fan of Mulroney on the right. That's a fair point. Alex Morrison, the aforementioned Alex Morrison, saying positive, it turns out we don't have a center back problem after all. Negative, Conway should get a chance platooning Joseph. He said it's a negative. Joseph needs a platoon for now, but I'm hopeful for Conway. And they got two more. Got Kirkwood Five Stripes saying positive, our defense is tight, and I feel like we played well for the first away game of the season. Negative, our midfield and attack is a little shaky. We need to make more of our counters and overall control of the game. And then last one, same, pretty much the same as Lee from our buddy LaFleur, saying positive, we didn't lose. Negative, we didn't win.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wait, didn't we, Tim, you know, we read all of our comments and reviews. Didn't we get some comments last week that we need to read?
Oh, my gosh.
Actually, did you Google translate them?
We actually got our first Podbean comment, which I thought was interesting. And I was trying to, I don't know if I have the login for our Podbean account or if we've even Podbean. I could read the beginning of it.
I got it. Miko Fernandez, best dating click. It's an 18 campsite. Tim, is this your alter ego? Timitope, Jacob. Watch more video, full HD. Click here. Another 18 campsite. we got a couple of vol.wtfs. Got a couple of those. But then we got some good ones. Bowdy Cool. Good to see Dan sporting the new kit. Now let's go to Orlando and take care of some business. And Edgar Hernandez, keep them coming. Hashtag Unite Cocker.
Yeah, and then one that's just a whole host of I won't even guess. I'm guessing Chinese characters, it looks like. I don't know, though. I'm speaking out of ignorance, obviously. But
probably some Pokemon shit.
That's probably what happened, right?
Oh, yeah, that's true. We were talking about Pokemon. It was probably...
All the K-pop fans came and supported us. That's what it was.
Oh, and by the way, Kevin won the guess on the prediction or the odds. He got 4 out of 5. Dan got 3 out of 5.
Oh, another point for Kevin. I'll take that too.
Yeah, another point for Kevin. Joe Johnstone asking if we're doing voicemails. Yes, that is correct. We're also asking. We're not begging yet for new reviews on Apple Podcast, but we would
very subscribe. Much. This is really the best thing we could ask for is you guys coming and tuning in live with us each and every
smashing
week.
Smashing the like button.
Smashing like and subscribe, hitting the bell icon so you can join us in the trap every week. And, you know, the engagements help fuel what the conversation and where things head during a typical show. So, really appreciate you guys for tuning in and helping us out with that every week. Elliot Beaver with the hard hitting questions. Who is best Pokemon?
Fucking hell.
Alakazam.
Ooh, I like it.
Isn't it Alakazam. Ditto? Because he can be all of them.
Well, then
he doesn't get a very weak version of all of them.
And he doesn't get all their attacks. Dan, fuck off. Just go.
That's like saying isn't Tien the most powerful of DBZ because he can multiply? No.
Yeah. No.
He becomes weak. He loses part of himself.
Exactly. Yeah. Dan, just go.
We did get the question. I don't know if we want to get into it too much because it completely consumed Twitter today. Jeff Rollins was asking, what's y'all's thoughts on your European Super League?
I don't have any thoughts on it.
Do we have enough time, Dan, for you to get into it?
Of course, man. We can go for it. Go for it.
I don't know yet if I'm for or against it. Honestly, part of it is like
doing this vaccine again, man. I'm sick of it. Just pick a side.
Everyone knows Madonna is the winner. So,
Tim, just commit, man. Like, I'm just kidding.
All right, AstraZeneca, Team AstraZeneca. Bring on the blood clots, baby. No, so the Super League. It's hard for me because I feel like. It came out, it didn't come out of nowhere necessarily, but the announcement kind of came out of nowhere because there are like rumblings of this happening for years and then them talking behind closed doors about it. And I understand gripes from the fans for their teams given the consequences that the FAs are bound to put in place and what UEFA has put in place. I don't know. It's weird to me because I see a lot of just self-righteous bloviating all over social media about it, where it's, and I posted this and it's kind of facetiously where it was like, it seems like people are, it's good if it's a governing body, if they're corrupt and don't enforce shit and they just take money from everyone and don't really like transfer bans don't really need to stick, and financial fair play is like this carrot that never gets, or whatever, I don't know, a hammer that never gets fucking thrown down on anybody. As long as the money's coming from the Middle East, it seems like people are fine with it. Right. So that's my issue with it right now is that I think there's a lot of disingenuous argument against the Super League. I think there are a lot of critiques that can be made and a lot of criticisms that could be drawn of the league and how it's come about and what it is and just kind of the permanent nature of it. And I think part of it too is, gosh, I could fucking talk forever about this. I think a lot of it has to do with changing the status quo. I think people are scared of that. I don't think it's the best way to go about it. But I mean, I wasn't around whenever the UEFA League and European Championships were created. I wasn't watching soccer whenever the Premier League was created. And it seems like a lot of people are kind of drawing comparisons of back then. And I guess that was early 90s, right, Dan? Whenever the Premier League, when the big teams kind of created that.
Avengers team, Tim? Which one? You got to pick one. Super League or Avengers?
Avengers all day. Actually, we're in the middle of rewatching the Avengers right now. Trying to make it through Ultron. Angie's never seen it. So I think, and Dan, and I'll let you speak for a minute.
Robert
too,
California the entire time you're watching.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Angie's watching. She's like, whose voice is that with Ultron? Oh. I was like, whose voice do you think it is? She goes, James Spader. I was like, yep.
That's all I can hear every time.
I'm the fucking lizard king.
I wish Ultron would say it so bad.
Yeah, so part of it is I think UEFA is kind of at fault for some of this. And I think part of it has to do with, if you're talking like
just logged off of AIM.
Yeah. one of the criticisms is the money. Like Gary Neville was saying earlier, Dan, today, his criticism was these teams can't expect to go out, make tens of millions of pounds from this competition and come be able to spend it to be in competition with these other teams in the Premier League that don't have that opportunity. But at the same time, I mean, you have four teams that, granted, it's a meritocracy to get there. They get that money from UEFA and they're able to spend that back home, or, you know, the TV money. I mean, the fact that like in the past, however many years, like Wolves can compete with the majority of Europe for transfers. Money definitely obfuscates a lot of things. And I think the injection of money from different sources and all that obfuscates a lot of things. And I think if you have really rich owners with endless pockets of oil money, you can definitely violate financial fair play, and you can ruin the stability of a lot of these leagues on your own. I don't know. I feel like this is just word salad that's coming out, and I haven't been able to formulate a great thought about it, but I'm not necessarily for or against it. If it means that my team, who is Liverpool, gets kicked out of EPL and gets kicked out of Champions League, I'm going to be a little mad about it. I don't know that I would stop supporting them just because of that, but I would just have to watch them play against the same 11 teams every single year, which I watch MLS do. And I watch Atlanta United do that. And I watch the Pacers do that every year. I watch the Colts do that every year. So, I mean, I don't know.
No, that makes sense.
Yeah. So if you're any business in the world, you're for-profit business, well, even a non-profit, what you're trying to do, the two things you're trying to do, you're trying to mitigate risk and you're trying to turn a profit. And what the Super League does is it mitigates risk and it turns a profit. And if you've got a ton of money, you're going to look to mitigate risk and turn a profit. So I'm not surprised that something like the Super League's coming along. It's going to happen. I feel like these ethical gestures are really just that. They're just gestures. Nothing's really going to make an impact. Something like this is just going to come along anyway. You're always, after 30 years of the Super League, there's going to be another offshoot. There's always going to be something that comes out, just like you said, with the Premier League.
If you look at it right now, the fact that there's two European Cups.
Right, exactly. And which one do you want? You want to be in the Champions League. Why? Because you make the most money out of it.
No, but so, Dan, the Europa League lets a lot more teams in, and it creates more competition, right?
Like, yeah. If you don't understand that football, soccer is about making money, then I've got a serious wake-up call for you. I've seen all these banners for, it's built off the working man. Okay, when Trevor Francis became the first person to be, first man to be transferred for £1 million back in 1979, when did the working man at that point in time have £1 million? It hasn't been a working man's game forever. I remember when Arsenal moved from Highbury to the Emirates Stadium and people were balking at the prices. It doesn't matter. The fact of the matter is people are going to pay what clubs are asking for to go see the games. It's not fair. If you're part of an economic class that doesn't make the money and you can't afford to go to the games, there's going to be other people that are looking to do that. I mean, you watch Sunderland Till I Die. Those are working class people. And what they do is they put their money into the club. That's where they choose to spend their money. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter really what the clubs do. They live and die by the club. If you're one of these people that say, okay, so let's say you're a Liverpool fan and they go to Super League, are you really going to, if you're going to like get rid of all your Liverpool stuff, if you're a purist, are you really a fan at that point? It's going to happen. It's not fair. The romantic part of me is like, yeah, we want to be keeping football inclusive, but the capitalist part of the world doesn't care for that. It cares about making money. So I would like for us all to like sit around and sing Kumbaya and think that I can have this romantic notion that Newport County in the League Two can eventually win the Premier League, but that's just not realistic because it's money is what makes things happen. And I'm surprised that there has been so much backlash because it's to me, when all that backlash happens, it tells me that you don't understand the economic factors that are happening. And plus Joe Johnson in the trap said, what's MLS? It's a closed system. It mitigates risk and it looks to make profit. So I love the MLS. I'm glad I don't have to deal with relegation. Relegation is a horrible thing to deal with. I feel all these people who like pro rel, they've never really experienced relegation. So
Dan,
MLS has already been the Super Cup.
All this talk about how you're on the side of making money, I've never been so proud to call you an American. I mean, I think you finally made it. I think if I had a vote, you'd get your citizenship now. I think you've finally come over and you've really proven yourself to us.
Kevin, you know what? I would say something like, it's been so long that I've wanted to hear those words from you, Kevin. And as soon as I say them, you're just going to be like, get the fuck out of my country and call them you, immigration services.
Knock, knock, knock. INS, is that the, yeah.
No, I mean, it's, I hate that people are, that it's, that people are so against it. And, I'm not going to, and I wish it would all be like, the way it could be, or the way, that it seems like the vast majority to be, but I just don't see it actually happening.
Yeah. Realistically. Yeah. No.
So And the other thing too that I found very ironic is the new reform for the Champions League that is slated to start in 2024-2025. I mean, some of the stuff they complain about with the Super League is elite teams, lots of money, unfair balance. UEFA came out and they're like, okay, we're going to inject more money, more TV time, more matches, guaranteed 10 matches per team. It's going to be no longer a group bracket format. It's going to start being, I think, just like a season. Is it just going to be a table is what I understand it to be? And then expand it to however many more teams. Mm-hmm. It's just, again, it's like the criticism for, yeah, it's like we can criticize these outsiders for starting something new, but we're going to pretty much do the same exact thing that they're doing. But you know us, and we let more people, like we let more teams in because
that's God why knows. We'll never start a Patreon.
Yeah.
So
God knows. I don't know how I'm going to live without seeing Apollon Nicosia or whatever Nicosia play in the opening round or like in the group stages. I don't know what I'm going to do without 3 weeks or 4 weeks of qualifying the fourth place in Scotland playing against the third place in Romania. God, like what am I going to do when it's just the same eight teams that end up playing in the quarterfinals the majority of the time? Like it's idiotic to me that I'm not calling people idiots for this, but the criticism is very, I think it's hypocritical is what I'm getting at.
So to your point, Tim, the Super League announcement has just increased the competition from UEFA. So that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to increase competition. And eventually if the Superliga doesn't work out, then it will fail. And that's okay. That's fine. That's just the path of the course. Then the best ones will be in UEFA in whatever form that takes.
How can UEFA in the points? I think Jeff Rollins and Brent Crawford were bringing up the points of the threats of player bans from the World Cup and from the Euro. I understand UEFA could keep players from playing in the Euro because they're the governing body over that. But how does that work? Is it FIFA or was it UEFA saying, because I'm pretty sure UEFA came out and said that they would ban any players competing in the Super League from playing in the World Cup.
It might be just the various governing bodies, you know, so it would just affect European teams. So CONMEBOL would still be fine.
Stupid. The sour grapes. Like, oh, but nobody cares that it's because it's the FIFA World Cup, Club World Cup, right? Because FIFA's making the money. They're the governing body of the Club World Cup. But I mean, it's not that much different. It's actually less competitive than, and it's like a friendly competition than the Super League. So I don't know.
Yeah. It's going to be really interesting. And I mean, if Super League comes about and the games are terrible between what is, you know, arguably the best teams in the world, then no one's going to watch it. But I think a lot of people are going to watch it.
Because God knows La Liga is so competitive that, you know, Real Madrid and Barcelona get what, like 90-something% probably of the TV money, all that revenue.
Yeah. Winning the Champions League is a stupid amount of money.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like £100 million, something like that.
Something.
If you win Champions League, yeah.
Yeah. Longshio actually broke it all down on one of the Soccer Down Here episodes, that it's just every stage that you get to is like another million, another like 10 million.
Yeah, and then you get that email from your owners whenever you're playing FIFA. Is like, well, we've only allowed, we're going to take 40% of this. You could use the rest for transfers. Like, we're going to take, we need this for administrative fees. Like, this is a video game. Give me all the money. Mm-hmm. What are you doing?
Yeah.
Anyway.
It's been interesting reading Alexi Lalas's tweets, actually.
Everyone
is just hating him, and he's like, well, it's kind of, you know, economics and driving competition, so yeah, you can call me some horrible names, but I'm just telling you how it is.
Yeah, I don't like the way that it came about. That's If it means more competitive soccer for me to watch, I'm all for it. But if it means like the breaking up and less soccer for me to watch, I don't know how I feel.
Yeah. And that's, and I mean, again, that's not going to happen because it's just going to drive, I don't know, does Champions League still say the same, or it's just going to drive more competition from the other competitions?
It's again, just going to force more streaming services. That's all it's really going
to do. Right, exactly.
That's what Jeff Collins like says.
You're going to have the Sky Sports streaming app, and that's the only way you're going to be able to watch it. So.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah,
Jeff Rollins
says taxes UEFA. And predatory loans.
Yep.
UEFA versus Super League is the same as cable versus streaming. It's the same shit. Yeah, exactly. It's just different people involved.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, thank you so much for tuning in, however you found us. If you found us on iTunes, be sure to rate or review. If you found us on YouTube, however you found us, be sure to like and subscribe. Hit that bell icon to get a notification each and every week whenever we go live. If you want to find us on Twitter or Instagram and interact with us directly, you can feel free to do so. Tim, where can they find you?
I don't know if they'll find me anywhere after you called me an anti-vaxxer and I'm going to end up getting shadow banned from and blocked on everything. But
I called you a neutral vaxxer. I said you just couldn't pick a side. It's even worse these days.
No, I called him an anti-vaxxer.
And Michelle asked me very poignantly and very pointed if I'm mask or no mask. So I'll leave that for next week's episode. Leave you guys on a cliffhanger there. But you
can, I can't wait to go.
Yeah, you can find in Joe Johnstone's trying to organize a meet and greet. I did not want to leave that out for the game on Saturday, socially distanced with masks. I will not be there. Angie will not be there. I don't think Kevin will be there, but and Dan, I don't know if you'll be there, but
nope. Okay. No, we'll not be. So, why are you think guys going to be there?
I just opted out just because I didn't know what was going to happen. My whole stance was I didn't have enough information to make a decision. One with how many people and how it was going to be handled and all that. Like, I think you can socially distance a certain amount at the seating level, but entry and exit, how are you going to manage that? The other side for me was just the, okay, so you opt in, but if I have a 100 level seat, am I going to end up being like 30 rows back because everything's having to get redistributed and how does that all work and everything else? So I just figured it'd be easier to opt out until we're back to full capacity. So.
We did the opposite where we didn't want to miss out potentially. We opted in, but said we didn't want to get moved up to, because we're down in the 100s to get moved up in the 200s. But Angie and I bought our tickets long before we were married and they're not group tickets. So we actually got separated. So anyway, so we're not going to be going, but again, we had no idea at the, I feel like the survey, we should have talked about this before, I guess. I wish the survey would have gone out after the capacity announcement, after all that stuff. It doesn't make a whole ton of sense, but anyway.
I mean, I expected as much from you two plastic fans.
You never
the
know,
guy
like,
who still hasn't even joined the waiting list. You could have had season tickets 3 years ago, but you're just over like, I'm waiting for it to be the right time. I'm still not sure.
Oh, it's a pandemic. Oh.
Yeah. It's a lot of unknowns. Anyway, you can find me at Tim Herb on Instagram, where I just post woodworking stuff. So if you guys are into that sort of thing.
What about you, Dan?
You can find me at DNJMS doing absolutely nothing, or you can follow me on Peloton at To the Power of Dan. I mean, go for a ride together.
I'm gonna stop that just asking makes me you think, this question.
That makes me think of Nelly from The Office, To the Power of Three with the pyramid.
Yeah.
It's not a pyramid.
And you're British.
Oh. And I'm British, well.
Yeah. Find me as well at The Architect. That's at @_ARC, #1. TECT collectively at Home Before Dark. That's before spelled B and the #4. Love the hell out of you guys. Thank you so much to all the new faces in the trap, all the familiar ones there as well. Love the hell out of each and every one of you. You make this show what it is and keep us going each and every week. So we'll see you next time. As always, be home before dark.
Let's go get the fire hose.
I'm a fire starter. It's the fire starter.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.